Erev Shabbat Shalom, Parshat Korach. Very dramatic parsha. And for us in Israel, has all kinds of implications in light of the political uproar that we're going through. And I'm not going to relate to that, because that's not what this this video is for. And also, it's not healthy to say that all of Judaism belongs on one side of a political agenda. But before I start, I do want to say this one thing. For me, I can't even begin to discuss Korach and the story in the Parsha without thinking about a prescient talk, about 2 hours long, that my teacher of Soloveitchik gave around 1977, I think it was, about Korach, in which he extrapolated certain elements of Korach's argument and put them in a contemporary context. And I strongly recommend that you go to YUTorah.org, and you look up his talk on Korach. It's there in three different versions. In other words, there are three or four different recordings there. It's fairly clear. I strongly, strongly recommend listening to it, because the truth of the matter is, I know of no better understanding of the story of Korach, or the arguments that were raised by Korach, than what Rav Soloveitchik offered. The Rav is talking not so much in terms of what emerged from the biblical text, but also from the way that the rabbis understood the text. But the point of the matter is that what he says there has, over the years, become more and more contemporary and more imminent in the way that we sort of challenges that traditional Judaism faces in the postmodern world. So I really recommend that, and it's to a certain degree, as you'll see from once you hear that and you see what I say, you'll see that to a certain degree it's in the background of everything I'm going to argue or going to present now. I'm not going to talk, however, about Korach himself. I want to talk about a Mishnah, and that's the other way I'm sure everybody and his brother and sister is discussing Korach this week. The Mishnah says in the fifth chapter of Pirkei Avot, chapter 5, number 17, Kol machloket shi l'shem shamayim, any machloket which is for the sake of heaven, sofalit kayem, will in the end endure. V'she'en l'shem shamayim, and one that is not for the sake of heaven, ain't sofalit kayem, will not endure. Ezoi machloket shi l'shem shamayim, what kind of argument, what kind of controversy is for the sake of heaven? This is the kind of controversies that characterize the exchanges and differences of opinion between Hillel and Shammai. V'she'en l'shem shamayim, the ones which aren't for the sake of heaven, zu machloket Korach v'chol adato. This is the argument or the controversy of Korach and his supporters. The text of the Mishnah itself is a little odd. So first of all, since when? I don't care whether it's if you're sincere or not. I mean, arguments aren't good. People don't like that. Well, Jews like that. But arguments necessarily aren't good. Don't we want to have resolutions? Don't we want to say, we figured it out? We can all agree. So why would I, even if your intentions were good, why would I want a controversy to continue? So that's number one. Number two, the example at the end of Korach is a little odd, for the simple reason that in the beginning, when we talk about the good type of machloket, the good type of controversy, you have Hillel and Shammai. It's both sides of the aisle, the both sides of the argument. But in the first part, we're only talking about Korach. When I'm talking about, it should say, and I saw one of the commentaries notes this, should say Korach and Moses, because those were the two sides. So why is the Mishnah actually formulated that way? So number one, one way of resolving this issue is provided by Professor Zeb Safran, in his commentary on the Mishnah, quoting his father, with whom he actually started the project of interpreting the Mishnah. His father says, Shmuel Safrai, his father observed and claimed that the word machloket in the Mishnah, in the rest of Jewish literature, machloket means an argument. I mean, it means an argument, it means a controversy, it means fighting, it means yelling and screaming and all kinds of stuff. But in the Mishnah, that's not what it means. What does it mean? In the Mishnah, what it means is a group. Sort of like in the army. In the army, the word for a company. You have platoons, and then you have... Then next you have a company. You have squads, and then platoons, and then a company. The word for a company is a mechlaka. A mechlaka is a... a mechlaka is a platoon. In any case, it's a group. It's a military unit, which is then devoted to whatever tasks there are. So if that's the case, the Mishnah is saying, any organization, any grouping, any school, if you want, any school of thought, school of law, which is devoted and organized for the sake of heaven, will endure because its purposes, its goals, its ideals are sincere, and they're right, and they're based on the right values. And that was Hillel and Shammai. In other words, Hillel and Shammai founded schools. They didn't agree, but they were both aimed at the bright. They both aimed at the same goals of serving God and finding or determining what the Torah wants of us. And therefore, even though we choose Hillel over Shammai usually, although there are plenty of places where Shammai wins out, or we follow Shammai, it doesn't really matter. They're both playing in the same field. They have the same, same outlook on what their goals are, even though their means or their methods might be very, very different. That kind of organization will endure. Because it's valid. The sincerity and the readiness to accept the yoke of heaven is enough to guarantee that each one has its own legitimacy. You can't say that. If that's what machloket means, then you can't say that about Korach. Korach was an organization. Korach was a school, or Korach was a party that was Shelo L'Shem Shamayim. It was not for the sake of heaven, and therefore it can't endure. You can't say that about Moses. Moses was it. Moses embodies, it's interesting, I mean, of all the, I wish I could go into this right now, but the whole question of the nature of controversy and difference of opinion in Judaism and so on, there's one thing that, by all accounts, you're not allowed to do, and one person is above question, and that's Moses, because it's called Torah Moshe. Moses got the Torah. Moses received the beginnings of the oral law. So he's out of the picture. So you can't say that it's a machloket shel Lashem Shamayim. It's only the lack of heaven orientation has got to be restricted to Korach. So why? What did Korach do? So here, it really depends on how you understand the story. If you look at the story in the Chumash by itself, then the problem was that Korach was jealous. Korach was apparently kept out of the loop, of the leadership loop among the Levites. He enlisted others who had actually been pushed aside, members of the tribe of Reuben, when in fact it's clear that Judah and Ephraim were going to be the leading tribes in Reuben, although Reuben was the poor. Now you're talking a bunch of malcontents, and they were seditious. They were seditious, and basically here, as Rav Soloveitchik does note, but not in a different context. Korach was a demagogue. Korach was a populist, and he basically said to Moses, "Who are you? we're all holy, we all heard the Torah, who are you to tell me who's Jewish, who are you to tell me what to do, who are you to tell me this, who are you to tell me that, we're all the same, everybody makes up their own minds, if it sounds familiar, then it should. His motivation was to exploit populist rhetoric in order to get himself a better situation in the power structure of the people. Okay, so that could be Shalel Hashem Shemayim. Such a thing can't endure. I don't know if it's because God won't let it endure, or because it's selfish and it'll end up consuming itself. Hard to know. Another way of looking at it, and what made Korach's school, the school of Korach, took away the sustainability of his organization, his party, if you want. It's not just the fact that they were swallowed up by the ground. Is because Korach, and here is Rav Soloveitchik's take, Korach arrogated to himself his own approach to Torah, which violated the inner norms of traditional interpretation. Now, obviously, this is anachronistic, that the rabbis are sort of reading this back in. But what one thing that Hillel and Shammai had in common is the fact they had a common Jewish language, common deference to the Torah, common deference to the oral law, common deference to how you weigh words and how do you come to decisions. Korach, according to the rabbis, made fun of the way that Moses was interpreting Revelation, and said, "No, it makes no sense to me. I want to do whatever I want to do," which is connected, of course, to the first approach. That's Shalel Lashem Shemayim, not because he wasn't sincere. Sincerity, I had an exchange on Twitter this week, just yesterday, about sincerity. I've always argued as a historian that one should always assume, or at least give the benefit of the doubt to historical actors, whether they're good or bad, that they are sincere. Yes, they have interests, but certainly when it comes to the Middle Ages or the pre-modern era, you don't lose anything by assuming that when people spout certain ideals and ideas, that they also play a formative function in their outlook. Again, you can be maliciously and malevolently sincere, but you know, you can be devoted to your ideals even if the ideals are very bad. So L'shem Shemayim here doesn't mean sincerity. It means Shalel L'shem Shemayim means that Korach took himself apart and tried to set up his own Judaism. He wanted to set up his own system, and that's why the encounter with Moses was uneven, because the two of them spoke different languages. They spoke different. There was nothing there in common. That kind of encounter can't sustain itself, because it'll either be one way or the other. There was a case of Hillel and Shammai. They argued over halachic issues. They had with theological issues, apparently, according to the late Dr. Yisrael Ben Shalom, who was also a Chassidish Rebbe and a Rosh Hashiva, as well as being a fine historian. One of the points of difference between the Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel was how you deal with the Romans. But the point was they all were sort of more or less in the same, devoted to the same ideal. It was a question of method. It was a question of interpretation. Korach decided he was going to set up his own shop. So there was no way to carry on an ongoing dialogue with Moses or with the people. It was going to be either or. And that's how he set it up. And in the end, we know that that there was a determination. So it's interesting if that's the case. It means that different sets of approaches and different sets of ideals, if they are in the same positive and proper framework, can sustain themselves. Democrats and Republicans, Likud and Avodah, whatever the case might be, because ultimately, both sides, whether you're talking about parties or whether you're talking about the differences of opinion or interpretation of the Torah, ultimately everybody aims for the same good. And in fact, there is a tradition of respecting differences of interpretation within Judaism. Now that raises the whole question of how is it possible one God gave one Torah? How is it possible that there are differences of opinion? So here there's a fundamental difference of approaches between Ashkenazim and Sephardim. The Sephardic or Mizrahi opinion is that really there is only one truth, but we have no way of God doesn't intervene and doesn't tell us what his opinion is. So therefore we sort of respect each other, even though we hold on to each side's being. We hold that the other side is not correct, but we respect their integrity. The Ashkenazi position is much more sort of anarchic, and that is that everybody's right. There was the old joke about the two guys come to the rabbi and say, I say X, Y, and Z, and the rabbi says you're right. Then he says the other guy, and the other guy presents his case, and the rabbi says you're right. And the rabbitson standing there, she's saying, wait a minute, they can't both be right. He's right, they can't both be right. And he looked at her and says, you're also right. That's a very Ashkenazic position. Ironically, Ashkenazic rabbis are no longer like that so much. But that was the classic Ashkenazic position. Either way, we're all working within the same framework of values and approaches to Torah. And that's why we not only suffer or tolerate, but also embrace differences of opinion. If both sides of an argument, actually, aim to the same public good, then there's something even deeper to be found in this Mishnah about machloket l'shem shamayim, about an argument or different organizations towards for the sake of heaven. A number of months ago, a dear friend of mine, a very special person, I think I mentioned him in one of the videos, a reverend named Neubert Zichrono Livracha passed away very, very young of a serious illness. In a clip that I found, I thought by accident, but there are no accidents, there are no coincidences, as we say in Israel, discusses this, and I urge you, those who know Hebrew, to look and put Machlaga L'Shem Shamayim Ronei Neubert into Facebook, and you'll see the clip. Rav Ronen, who was a person who was very, very interested in bringing people together and in bridging the gaps within Israeli society, started his discussion of this issue of Machloket L'Shem Shamayim by quoting Rav Kook from Orot. And he focused in on two lines. He said, if Rav Kook says, effectively, if different elements within a society, even if they disagree almost violently, or certainly intensely, with the other side, if they both respect the fundamental loyalty of the other for the betterment of the people, of society, that their encounters, as intense and as shrill as they may become, will end up leading to clarity for both sides. The controversy itself and the argument itself, as long as they are not personal and the exchange is constructive, will ultimately lead both to the truth. Each one will recognize that the other side has some of the truth with them. And ultimately, the two sides will merge for the sake of heaven and lead to a determination, a decision, to an accord, and in the interim will allow for both sides together to build a better future. That's Machalot L'Shem Shamayim. Then the organizations or the arguments will end up leading to a peaceful and a healthy and a calm resolve. Shabbat Shalom.